Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Karen, and we have a special guest. Kristen is with us here today. So, hey guys, how's it going?
Hi, good.
Hi, pretty good. Yep, yeah, pretty good.
All right, excellent. So, Kristen's joining us because Merrim has been super busy. So, Merrim is going to be on like every other week for a while rather than every week, which is pretty cool. So, we'll have Kristen as a guest, and then we're next week, I think we have a more permanent guest coming to join us as well. So, there might be four of us on Book Hype for the most part, which will be pretty fun. I think you guys will like it. So, it'll be a surprise for our next episode as to who will be with us more frequently. Anyway, and we'll, no, I was going to give you a hint, but it would give it away, so I'm not going to do that. I take it back. Take it back. All right, so let's get started with what we've been reading. And Kristen, as our guest, why don't you go ahead and start by telling us what you've been reading?
Sure. Asa by Jay Crownover just came out this past Tuesday, and I, like, rushed through it, which I loved all of the Markmen, so I really, really liked the book, but it's still not my favorite. Rome is always going to be my favorite in that series. But I also read Crushed by Lauren Lane. I picked that up about a week ago, and that's really, really good. I love all of her stuff, too. So, but that's the last one in that little, like, series, and it has the female character in that book is probably one of my favorite female leads that I've read in a while. Like, she's just different, and she's got like crazy wild curly hair, and she's just kind of all over the place, and I loved it. And then I lucked out and won a signed arc for Cora Carmack's new book in the Rusk University series, All Played Out, and I got a copy of that. Like, I got it last week, so I rushed through that too. And it's great. It's just as good as All Broke Down, which is the second book. And I absolutely love that series. So I was geeked to get my hands on it. So I've been slowly writing my like Amazon and Goodreads reviews because I want it to be really good for when the book comes out. So I'm really excited. It's been a really fun time for like the series I'm into. Like, they're all kind of either ending or getting right to the meat of where all the stories are. So it's really good fun.
And I was going to say, I know you love Cora Carmack, so that must have been pretty awesome.
Oh, I lost it because I won it. Like, she did like a Twitter party and she was only giving away one. And there were honestly probably 100 people tweeting at her all night long. Like, it was insane. And I just, like, you know, you get involved in those things because they're fun, and I was having a good time, but I didn't think she'd pick me. And my name popped up, and I was like, oh my god. I was very, very geeked. And she signed it too, which is just awesome.
Excellent. All right, Karen, go ahead and get to what you're reading, because what you've been reading is kind of relevant to the podcast. So go ahead and tell us all about it.
Okay, I'm so excited. I just finished Undertow by Michael Buckley, and this was a really weird, sort of cool story about these creatures called Alpha, who are sort of like jacked up mermaids in a way. And I know that sounds like, I don't know about that, but the way that he writes them is really cool. They're very dangerous and sort of monstrous. And they come up on the beach and the humans have to deal with them being there. But the reason why they're there is that they were actually chased out of the ocean by something else. And so you kind of follow the story of this girl who they have to incorporate the alpha into society, and it starts with them doing it in the schools. And it reminds me so much of that one book that I know I've talked about on the podcast before, Warriors Don't Cry, which is about the civil rights movement and the first 9 African-American children who were incorporated into this school. And there are so many parallels between that book and the civil rights movement and what's happening in this story that it's really beautiful, and it's a really interesting way to look at like racism and segregation and how humans act toward things that they don't understand. And it might sound kind of silly because it's basically about mermaids, but it's so deep and so interesting. I could not put it down. It's a really well-written story. And so I'm choosing it as my June book. So how's that for 2 months ahead of time?
It is impressive, Karen. You guys have to understand, like, the other day I get this random message from Karen. I have picked my book. And I'm like, seriously? Like, okay, what is it? And then she's like, it's kind of weird. I'm like, okay, that's a great lead-in. What is it? And then she told me, I was like, I have to say, the description she just gave you guys was significantly better than the one that I got. I was a little concerned. I feel much better about it now, though.
Okay,
much
good. Better. And the funny thing is, he says in the back of the book, he lists a couple of people who sort of influenced his writing, because I guess this was, like, pretty different for him. And one of the people is Andrew Smith, who did Grasshopper Jungle. So if that gives you any idea of maybe the sort of tone of this book and how he's approaching talking about the alpha... it's not quite as weird as Grasshopper Jungle. Not many things are, but it's in the same vein, I'd say.
Alrighty then. Well, I am, I'm looking forward to that then. Is that one I sent you by any chance?
No, actually. Okay. I got it all on my own.
No, I was just curious because I was going to be like, I might need you to send it back to me now. All right, so let's see. I have been reading some interesting things. I read The Isle of the Lost, which, for those of you who are huge Disney fans, know that that is the prequel novel to the Descendants movie that's coming out on Disney, and it is about the children of the villains that are essentially trapped on an island. All the villains were... basically sent to an island with a dome over the top of it, and that's where they're meant to live out their lives. So the story and the movie are all going to be about the children of the villains. This particular book was written by Melissa De La Cruz, which I think is super interesting because this is not her normal, like, genre. If you've ever read Melissa De La Cruz, you've read, like, Blue Bloods or her new series that she has out. It's kind of, it's got, it's Stolen and that whole series. Totally nothing like this. So this is very different from her. What it does have, it still has her, like, wit and snark and all the fun things that you really like about her dialogue. All of that is there. So it's a really cool story. And if you like Disney, you will definitely like this book. It's a lot of fun. It's very Disney. But it's really fun to read prior to the movie coming out because you get all this kind of really cool backstory about the characters and stuff. The one thing I was kind of annoyed by was the names of the characters. Like, Mal is Maleficent's daughter. And stuff like that. Like, the names are kind of close to the parent names. It's, like, Jay is Jafar's son. So, that part kind of was like, really? We couldn't have been a little bit more fun? And I don't think Melissa De La Cruz had anything to do with naming of them. I think that was already kind of set in place. But overall, it's a really fun book. So, it comes out, I think, next week. So, you might want to pick that up, especially, like I said, if you're a Disney fan. The next book I read is The Heir by Keir Cass. For any of you who have read the Selection series, you guys know that this book is new, and it is about their daughter. So this is a whole new generation going through the Selection. I don't want to give too much away because it's kind of, I don't know, it's interesting. I think you guys will like it, especially if you like the Selection. She's not like America in the ways that you would expect, so that's really fun and different because we're going to see someone completely different kind of going into this thing. So that comes out in a couple weeks. I definitely suggest picking that up. It was a lot of fun. It's a really quick read, too. It's a much faster paced feel to it than some of the other novels, so I think you guys will like it. And the last book that I listened to, I didn't read it. When I was traveling a lot the last couple of weeks, I listened to books on Audible. So I was listening to Beautiful Secret by Christina Loren. It's definitely an adult novel. It's part of their Beautiful series, like Beautiful Bastard and Beautiful Stranger, if you guys know those books. And I like it because one of the narrators is a British male, and he is fantastic. I love it when he reads to me. But I like this series. The series is a lot of fun. And it's not just a sexy novel. There's a little bit more to it than that, which is always good. And so this one, if you guys know anything about the series, this is about Niall, and this is Max's brother. So he's British. And it was really fun. I liked it. And he's different because he's not your typical alpha male character that you find in these kinds of stories. So I really enjoyed how different Niall was compared to the other males that you come across in the stories. So I liked it. He might be my favorite. Sonia, who is also at Hypeable, loves these stories, and we frequently talk about them. So as I was reading this one, I was getting text messages from her because I think she, like, put the kids to bed one night and then just stayed up and read the whole thing, like, as soon as it came out. It was pretty funny. And she's like, I know you're going to really love him. I know this one's going to be your favorite. And she was pretty much right. So that was kind of fun.
That series is at the top of my, like, to-be-read pile.
Other choices are, I would say that you would really like this series.
Yeah. Well, I've been waiting for them to come in my library, like, an audiobook, because a lot of times I listen to stuff at work, I listen to it in the car, it just makes it easier. So I've been waiting for them to pop in there, but I might have to...
You might have to just get an audio subscription and just suck it up.
Yeah.
No, they're really... And I love the people that read them, they're really good. Like, the narrators are really strong, because, I mean, really, you have to have a good narrator for these kinds of things, otherwise it gets really awkward. So this one was good. I like the narrators. And like I said, the one guy does, like, this amazing British accent, so sign me up. so that's where we're at. All right, we're going to move on to, we didn't even tell you what the show is about today, you guys. We just totally jumped into books. I completely forgot. So in case you were wondering, as we're babbling on about what we've been reading, the show today is going to be about some of the things that we are excited for, some of the upcoming items that we've been waiting for, like, seriously waiting for. So the first up will be, we're going to do some speculation about Magnus Chase, which is the new Rick Riordan series that won't be coming out until October, but come on, we have to talk about that. Next will be the Mortal Instruments TV show, which just cast its new lead, which is going to be kind of exciting. There are some things I definitely think that need to happen in order to make it successful. And lastly, we're going to talk about Carry On, which is Rainbow Rowell's new or kind of new spinoff book from Fangirl. And that just got a cover this week, which was really kind of interesting. So we'll talk about all of those things. But first, we're going to do our Book Bites. And our Book Bites topic this week is, what makes you want to give a book 5 stars? This is a challenging question. So, dear listeners, we pose it to you as well. Of course, you always tweet us and tell us what, you know, makes you want to give a 5-star review. Because I think those are hard to come by sometimes. I know I don't give them too easily. So I don't know about you guys, but I would love to hear what people think about that so that we can share with others. So, Karen, as this was your book bite question, I am going to make you go first.
Okay, fair enough. I'm actually pretty easy on books. They usually get 4 or 5 stars. If I don't particularly like a book, they'll get 3 stars, which is pretty high still. But I think I feel bad and I can't, like, I think I've only ever given 1 or 2 books 1 or 2 stars. So 5 stars doesn't come too hard for me, but I will say to bump it up from 4 stars to 5 stars, it's got to be something that I cannot put down. It's got to be something that really sort of brings me into the world to the point where, like, somebody could be standing in front of me talking to me and I won't even be paying attention because I'm so engrossed in the story. And it has to be something that I cannot stop thinking about even after I put it down, whether it's like, oh my gosh, I need to reread this, or oh my gosh, I can't wait till I can get to the next chapter sort of thing. So just something that's really engaging and really unique that makes me want to keep reading it over and over again.
Okay, I get that. I always feel bad because, like, giving super low reviews because this is someone's work. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Someone put so much effort and heart into it. And just because I didn't like it doesn't mean that it's someone else shouldn't like it. So I'm always really careful about how I give reviews. So essentially, like, I know for me, if I'm not going to give a book at least 3 stars, then I just don't talk about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how you know I didn't like it. It doesn't get anything for me. If you know that I've read it and I've not talked about it or like given it a review somewhere, that pretty much means I didn't really like it, you know? And I mean, it's hard. I feel bad because I have, you know, friends who are authors and I know what it's like for them to get these reviews that are like terrible or like they get horrible stars. And a lot of the times though, to be fair, sometimes those reviews are like, It was a terrible book because, and it's some kind of weird reason. Like, the reasons I don't like books are, like, if the writing is engaging, it's amazing. But if there are a lot of, like, errors in the writing or if there are plot holes in the writing. I have a really hard time with that, and that's where I'll start to get kind of like, oh. Or if, like, the lead character is very much this woe is me, continuously complaining kind of character, can't take it. Like, I told you guys last week about the one book that I read that I was really just like, no, it's not, mm-mm. So, I mean, there's a couple, actually, recently that I've read that I would not talk about ever, because I just didn't like them at all. So yeah, that's it for me. To actually get a full 5 stars, I think you really, like Karen said, it has to be super engaging. It has to be something I want everyone to, like, read, and I want to tell everybody about. And, like, Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda for me is an absolute 5-star read. So, like, that's the benchmark. I mean, it has to be that good. Or it has to be, like, you know, Stephanie Perkins' books, you know, Anna and the French Kiss. I loved those books. I love them. I read them in one sitting. I would read them again and again and again, and they don't get old because they're fresh and they're unique. And those are the kinds of things for me that get, you know, the 5-star ratings. But I don't know. So, Kristen, how about you?
For me, I fall along those same lines as you guys. Like, typically, if I am reading a book, it's going to be 3 stars or above. If it's under 3 stars, I probably won't even list it, because chances are I either didn't finish it because it drove me so crazy I couldn't take it anymore, or there was just something about it that rubbed me the wrong way. So more often than not, it's 3 or 4 stars for me. I will give a book 5 stars if it's, it has to have something, like, extra. It has to be a book I want to go back to. It has to be a book that I, like, that I really, really feel strongly about. Like, I kind of looked at my Goodreads as soon as Karen put this in the doc, because I wanted to see what books I had given 5 stars to. And they are all books that I've read, like, more than once. They're all books that I will happily tell anyone who I know likes that kind of story. Like, they're the first books on my mind to tell people to read. So yeah, for me, a 5-star review, it has to be a great read. It has to be something that, like, I really love the author's style. I love the way they wrote the characters, and it has to be something that I can read again and again.
Excellent. I like it. I think we're all kind of on the same page. I think we need to pose this question to Marima when she's on next, because I think it would be interesting to see how she answers, because mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be so nice.
she's a lot more discerning.
Well, she also,
she's not afraid to tell you if she doesn't like something.
It's not that I'm afraid. I try to take into consideration that this is someone's work.
No, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I don't need to go and be snarky and rip it to shreds to make, what is that going to do? That serves no purpose in my mind. So I might say, yeah, I didn't like it. It wasn't for me. These are the reasons why. But I'm not, you know, and sometimes I think reviews can go a little bit overboard with everything. So I don't know. That's just me, though. And to be fair, Merima was an English major, so she has a whole different perspective on literature, I think, than I know she does than me, because I mean, I'm not an English major, so I was very different. I was a science girl, so we have very different perspectives on things. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. And like I said, listeners, let us know how you grade books and how that works for you. All right, so let's get on to this very cool Magnus Chase speculation. Now, Karen, you wrote an article this week about who Magnus's godly parent could be. Do you want to give us a little recap about that? Because that's kind of like our first question to talk about. Who could his godly parent be?
Yeah, and that's always a really big topic when you're going into a new Riordan series, because obviously that just sort of guides what the entire series is going to be about. So what I did was I took Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard's synopsis, and I sort of broke it down. There were a couple of points that really jumped out to me, the first of which was Magnus's mother died mysteriously, and that his father is a Norse god. Also, that he has a dangerous uncle. Magnus must prevent Ragnarok, and he will start a new life by dying. And I kind of took all of those points and just Googled it. And I think the important thing here is that we know his father is the Norse god. So that kind of gets rid of some of our other options. And what I did was Googled Norse god of rebirth. And the first thing that I came up with was Balder. And Balder actually seems to be a pretty good fit. And that's what I wrote my article on, because it turns out Balder was the second son of Odin, and he was loved by all of these gods. And what ended up happening was that all the objects in the universe said that they weren't going to hurt him, except for Mistletoe. And then Loki came over and tricked Balder's brother into throwing a spear of mistletoe, which killed Balder. So that's where the dangerous uncle comes in. And also, Balder's death is the first sign of Ragnarok. So I think that that's sort of where Riordan is going to be going with this tale, because his death is the sign of Ragnarok, and also he's supposed to, him and his brother, because his brother was killed after he killed Balder, they're supposed to come back when, I guess, Ragnarok is over or something like that. And all of these different clues kind of led me to really believe that he could possibly be Magnus Chase's father, which I think is really interesting, because we were like, oh, is it going to be Thor? Is it going to be Loki? Which I think a lot of people are hoping for, because that would be sort of a new twist as the kind of villainous side to Norse mythology. But I, at this point, after all the research I've done, I'd be pretty surprised if it wasn't Balder, because it just seems to fit so well.
I mean, when you say something like troublesome uncle, you know that it's going to be a son of Odin, because Loki's going to be the pain in the butt uncle. Like, that's just, it has to be that. I can't think of anyone else that would be, you know, like, recognizable, because with the whole Norse mythology thing, like, there aren't a lot of people who know a lot about it. I mean, thanks to Marvel, we all have a very general understanding of, like, some of the main players, but we don't know a whole lot about it. So in order to have some recognizable names, he has to kind of fit, you know, Loki into that story, and probably Thor and Odin in some way. But using Balder, who's a character we don't really know, I think would be a really great way to incorporate Magnus into the whole Norse mythology thing without, like, using Thor, which everyone has heard of and has an idea of who Thor is. So I think it's an interesting way to not be, like, super predictable, but also kind of get the main family involved too.
Right. And the thing is, like, Loki, I initially thought he could be the dangerous uncle that they were talking about, but I think the whole point is that his name is Hodor, which kind of makes me think of Game of Thrones. But I think he's meant to be the dangerous uncle, because the mother warns Magnus about the dangerous uncle. And I think it's because Hodor was the one who ended up killing Balder. And so I'd be interested in seeing Hodor, like, coming up to Magnus and being like, oh, hey, I'm your uncle. And Magnus not really wanting to help him. And Hodor sort of having to redeem himself, because he was essentially tricked into killing his brother. Hodor is blind, and Loki, we know how mischievous he can be, so maybe it'll be like a redemption story for Balder's brother.
Okay, did you Google Thor when you were looking?
I did not.
Thor has a son. Do you know what his name is?
What?
Thor has two sons, but one of them is named Magni.
Oh. Okay.
So what if it's Thor's son that is Magnus's father?
Mm. Oh, that's okay. So do we know anything about Magni's brother then?
His name is Modi. And they are both set to inherit, I don't know how you say the name of the hammer.
Mjolnir?
Thank you, Mjolnir. Thank you. We're going to have to do a lot of learning of Norse mythology. It's going to get ugly. But they're both set to inherit the hammer. So what if Modi is the evil uncle because he wants to inherit the hammer on his own? Just a thought. That's all I've got. But as soon as I saw that, I was like, wait, Magni? Seriously? Can it be that easy? And his name means mighty. Hmm. So, because the other thing I did, as I always do when I see, you know, new characters with, you always look up someone's name, because I always think it's super cool to kind of see if there's a hidden meaning within the name of the character. So, like, Magnus Chase means great hunter, which I thought was really cool too. And so if you put in Magni, it means mighty. So Mighty Hunter. So I wonder if that has something to do with it. And also, just to throw it out there, one of the very relevant Norse kings were named Magnus as well. So there were like 7 or 8 of them that were named Magnus. So it's kind of a very prominent name in that mythology and just history in general.
Right. I'm really hoping that he goes down this other road where it's not going to be something like Thor, or, I mean, Thor's son would be off the beaten path, I think. But I'm really looking forward to something really different with this, because we've had technically 3 series. I mean, 2 in the Percy Jackson world, 1 in the King Chronicles world, which is Egyptian mythology. But I would really like to see something very different out of this, considering that I don't want it to be too repetitive. He's got a good thing going, and I think that the Norse mythology is going to bring a unique aspect to it. But I was one of the people that was really hoping that Loki would be his father, because I feel like that could be a really interesting thing. Like, he has to come to terms with who his father is and who maybe he might be turning into because his father is Loki. But if we don't end up getting that, I would like to see one of the minor and lesser known gods so that he can school us on Norse mythology, because a lot of people just know the Marvel stuff, and the Marvel stuff is not totally accurate.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought it was kind of interesting, so I figured I would throw it out there. So are we for certain that it has to be his father that is the god, not the mother? We're sure.
I'm pretty certain that it's got to be his father, just because it did say that his mother died mysteriously. I don't know. I just feel like that could be his adopted mother, or it could end up being something else like that. But just from the synopsis in general, I feel like it would have to be his father, who is the godly parent.
Okay. I was just curious. What was I going to say? Oh, I was also wondering, because I was thinking, like, do you guys know, like, the myth of the Valkyrie? Because I thought it would be cool maybe if his mom was somehow a Valkyrie.
That could be pretty cool.
And that's why her death was mysterious.
Okay, for someone who doesn't really know what you're talking about as far as Valkyrie goes, I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Well, Valkyrie means lots of different things, but in Norse mythology, the Valkyrie are the ones who go out and heal people and find the souls on the battlefield and then take them to heaven or to Valhalla.
Yeah.
So if she was some sort of Valkyrie and she met Baldur somehow in Valhalla, or so, you know what I mean? Like something, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm way outside the box on this one, so I don't know enough about Norse mythology to be too accurate, but I don't know. I just thought that would be kind of cool.
That would definitely be cool. Yeah.
And it would play into her mysterious death. Do you know what I mean? It could also make her not actually dead. So I don't know. It would be kind of cool. Just throwing it out there. So any other thoughts on who the parent could be or anything like that?
I like the idea that some people have brought up that maybe the dangerous uncle could be a Greek god, which would really turn this on its head, considering that Magnus Chase is supposedly Annabeth Chase's cousin from Percy Jackson. So could we be seeing a Greek uncle helping a Norse demigod? That would be different.
That would definitely be different.
Yeah, wow. That would be crazy. I mean, like I said, you know, he's related to Annabeth, but nobody knows how yet, right? Is that kind of the deal?
Well, the thing is that Annabeth mentions she has an uncle in Boston who doesn't get along with her dad, and he has a son, so it would be her cousin. And that's really, like, the only line that we get. And I'm not entirely sure if we figured out exactly how all of that would work, especially considering if the uncle is still alive, does that mean his mother, like Magnus's mother, would be the god? So yes. It's just, I feel like we don't have enough information yet.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could really go either way, but I don't know. I think it's cool. I like the whole idea of trying to, like, figure it out early and then being completely wrong later and being like, yeah, I should have known better.
Yeah.
So, Are there any specific, like, mythologies you want to see interwoven into the stories? Like, we saw some really cool stuff with Percy Jackson and then the Heroes of Olympus. And then, again, with the King Chronicles, there were some really cool Egyptian things happening there. So what do you guys think about this particular story? Is there anything specific you'd like to see from this mythology?
Well, I was just doing some, like, random preliminary research, looking to see if there were any Norse gods that I hadn't heard of that would be kind of cool. And, like, just looking through these, there's one, I don't know how to pronounce this, so I might be destroying it, Bragi or Braggy. It's B-R-A-G-I.
Is that the poet?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it says that he has, like, runes, like, carved onto his tongue, and I feel like the whole idea of that would be really cool. I feel like there's a lot he could do with that, especially being an author and, like, loving the written word and all that. I feel like that could be a character who could be involved in this and be kind of interesting. So just the whole idea of him being the god of poetry and having the runes carved in his tongue just kind of sank into my brain. But that one sounds really cool.
Very fun. Karen, how about you? You've been doing a ton of research because this is totally your, like, realm. So what do you think? Anything specific stick out to you?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'd like to learn more about Loki. I'd like to see his take on him, because he's seen as an antagonist, but just like Hades in Greek mythology, he's not a bad guy. He just happens to have poor qualities or a crappy job, so it kind of just depends. But one of my favorite books ever is Everworld. It's a series, and it explores this Norse mythology stuff, and the take that they have on those gods is really interesting. And one of my favorite is Hel, H-E-L, and their take on her as a deity. And she's sort of like half regular and half completely decaying and really kind of gross. And I'd like to see her pop up and maybe give Magnus Chase a run for his money.
Very cool. I do like that idea. That's kind of fun. The other thing I've noticed is there's a lot of really cool stuff with, like, giants in Norse mythology. There's, like, this whole, like, breed of giants, and, like, they have their own world. Because there's the nine worlds, basically. And so within those nine worlds, each one contains essentially, like, a different species, if I'm reading this correctly and understanding it. So I think it'd be really cool because I think there's a lot to explore. There's also Fenrir. Is that how you say his name?
Yes.
He seems really cool too, and he's got villain stamped all over him.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I would really like to see him pop up a little bit too. I think yeah. You can almost not... You can't not have him almost, so... I don't know.
I think that would be really cool. And also, they've been doing a lot of promotion with the Magnus Chase. Like, the one thing that they first came out with, which is just the title, has little dogs or wolves all over it. And then they did another one that was like the halfway point. It was 180 days until Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, the first book of which is called The Sword of Summer, comes out, and again with the dog with this like tongue sticking out. So I just wonder if that's a clue, and if it is, I can't figure it out, but if anybody else can, please.
Yeah, okay. So see, do you know that Hel is basically the daughter of Loki and the giantess Angrboda?
I think I knew she was the daughter of Loki.
Yeah, she's the daughter of Loki and the giantess Angrboda. They also have a serpent for a child, Jormungand, and then they have the third, who is the wolf, Fenrir. And Hel is the death goddess.
Right.
So they basically gave birth to three children that can easily be all villains. Just saying. So that's kind of cool. I don't know. So yeah, I think those things will be fun to look at. And I'm kind of really excited about this because I don't know a lot about the Norse mythology and stuff. So I'm kind of excited to read it. And the fact that it's kind of set in Boston, which is like, you know, a stone's throw away from me. And Rick Riordan moved to Boston prior to writing Magnus Chase. So as he was writing, he could literally walk the streets of Boston to include that in his book. So I'm really curious to see how accurately he included those things in his book. So it's kind of exciting. And speaking of Boston, what do you guys think of that setting for this new set of books?
I'm all for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the Percy Jackson books having such a strong center in New York City, like, you needed a city that had something to offer that's not just the Empire State Building. And, you know, like, you needed a city that had some sort of history or something to kind of ground your character in. And I really like the choice in Boston because it's not too far from New York. So if you have to involve Annabeth at some point, or if he wants to connect the worlds, like, they're not too far apart. And if he doesn't, it's, you know, it can be a totally separate place. It's not necessarily something that has to be related to the other books. So I think it's a good place. I think it'll be a really interesting setting.
Yeah. And Karen, you're going to do an article about different things in Boston that could be included in the book, right?
I am. I don't know when yet because I need to do a little bit of research, but you gave me a great list of things that you would like to see in the book, and I'm going to do some research, see if I can find any connections to Norse mythology or anything I think would be fun for Magnus to sort of explore while he's on his journey.
Absolutely. And do you want to tell them what we found when we were searching things in Boston? There was one very interesting thing.
Because I can't remember.
Oh, there is a statue of Leif Erikson at the head of the Boston Common Park. And there's a reason for it. It's just, they erected a statue of Leif Erikson. And in and around Boston, there were, back in the early 1900s, there were some anthropologists that really truly believe that the Vikings had landed on the shores before the Pilgrims, and there were digs, and there was research regarding that. So there is this weird connection to Viking history that there isn't. I mean, there, it's a very tenuous connection. It's not very clear, but there were people who definitely believed that the Vikings were here first, and they were looking for Viking settlements. And like I said, in the middle of Boston, there is a statue of Leif Erikson. So it's kind of interesting. We'll see if that plays into the book at all. All right, so is everyone good on Magnus Chase? Anyone have any last thoughts before we move on?
Is it October yet?
It's going to be a while, kid. It's going to be a while. Of course, listeners, if you have any speculation about Magnus Chase, who his godly parent could be, or any of the other things that we talked about or something we didn't talk about, please feel free to tweet at us and we will share it on the next podcast, because I think this is a book we're going to be talking a lot about until October gets here, and maybe even, you know, a little bit after October's here. All right. So let's move on and discuss this Mortal Instruments business. So as we talked about the last couple of episodes, the Mortal Instruments is now being made into a TV series at ABC Family. It's been put to pilot, it's been series ordered, I think, actually. So we'll definitely see at least some episodes of this in early 2016, which is approaching, and they haven't fully cast the entire cast yet, which is kind of interesting if they're looking to move forward that quickly. But we did get a little bit of casting news this past week. They have cast a new Jace. And if any of you guys saw The Vampire Academy, you guys will know this guy as being Christian. And his name is Dominic Sherwood, and he will be the new Jace in the TV series. I like this casting for a couple of different reasons. For those people who absolutely loved Jamie as Jace and couldn't get enough of him, for those people who really thought Alex Pettifer should have always been Jace and will always be Jace, you know, Dominic Sherwood is like this amalgamation of the both of them. You kind of put those two in a blender and you get Dominic Sherwood. And I did like him in The Vampire Academy. So I think it'll be good. I think he will be good at this. As for the rest of the cast, we have no information whatsoever, but I'm assuming within the next couple of weeks there will be more information regarding who will be cast. I know there was a little bit of rumor about who might be playing Clary. Cassie Clare had posted a picture of her with Molly Quinn. There we go. She posted a picture of herself with Molly Quinn, who is on Castle. She plays his daughter Alexis, and there were some comments regarding her playing Clary. I don't know if they're accurate or not, but it was discussed, so we'll see about that. So what do you guys think about Dominic Sherwood as Jace?
I am excited because I didn't really particularly love, what was his name?
Jamie
Campbell, right?
Bauer, yes.
Bauer. Oh, never mind.
No, it's Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Okay. I was like, okay. Yes, him. I didn't love him as Jace, and I think part of it was like he was very gaunt looking, and that was just not the person that I had pictured in my mind. And usually I don't really care that much about that sort of thing, but while I still liked him in the movie, it just never felt right to me. Looking at Dominic Sherwood, he looks a little bit meatier and tougher, which is what I would think somebody like Jace would look like. So I'm definitely there for it. I mean, he's pretty handsome, so no complaining there. In terms of Molly Quinn as Clary, I don't know if I could see her like that. She has this very kind of innocent look to her, which I guess Clary kind of is in some way, but I liked how badass she looked in the movie, and I hope they continue with that, and maybe they can, I don't know, put her in some dark makeup and some like crazy outfits and it'll end up working. But I haven't seen a whole lot of episodes of Castle, so I'm not entirely sure what she's like on screen, but you know, I have hope. I'm really excited about this show.
Okay. And now, Kristen, I know you haven't read the books, but looking at Dominic Sherwood, how do you feel?
Yeah, no, I haven't read the books, and no, I didn't get to see the movie either. It was on my, like, list. Like, I was going to see it at some point. It just never happened. But, you know, I saw trailers, and I had a general idea of, like, you know, what the books are kind of about, like a very, very general idea. And he looks like he'd be a really decent lead. I have a really decent history with ABC Family shows. Like, some of them have been some of my absolute favorites. I love Chasing Life, which is on right now, and I loved Greek. So they have a really good handle on like this, the age group that I think that I'm guessing this book probably takes place in, like that teenage.
Yeah, we're looking at late teens. They may age up, but yeah.
Yeah, like that, they have a really good handle on that age group and, you know, the things that come along with that. And I haven't seen them do an adaptation yet, but I think this could be right up their alley. So I'm definitely going to check it out if it pops up on TV. I'll let you guys know what it's like watching as a non-reader.
Yeah, I think that'll be really interesting, too, because that's the other thing, like, I think so many people read, like, Pretty Little Liars is also on ABC Family, and that is an adaptation. And I mean, it strays and it does a lot of other things, but it was based on a series of books. So, yes, Pretty Little Liars did well as a book series, but it did even better as a TV series for ABC Family. So I'll be curious to see if the same thing can happen with the Mortal Instruments. It'll be interesting, considering there's already a movie out about it. You know what I mean? Like, this is where it gets... This is kind of an unprecedented kind of area where we already had this movie. The movie was not successful. So now we're going to do it as a TV show and start from scratch all over again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just an odd thing. This doesn't happen frequently or if ever. So to do it this way is really interesting. So now we're going to have a brand new cast, you know, brand new scripts, and everything's going to start again. So I'm curious to see how it plays out. I think, you know, that they need to be really aware of where the movie didn't work. Because there were definitely certain things where the movie was not successful in staying true to the source material. And I think the truer the TV show can be to the source material, the better off it's going to be. You know,
Which is kind of interesting because shows based on book series have been notorious for drifting from the source material. Like, Vampire Diaries is nowhere near where they are in the books. Pretty Little Liars, you just said, like, they kind of drifted away.
Right.
Even Game of Thrones, like, they stuck to the books at the beginning, but they've kind of drifted further and further from what George R.R. Martin, you know, has written to a T. Like, so,
yeah.
So it makes me wonder how well they'll stick to to it. Like, if that's what the problem with the movie was, hopefully they'll stick a little closer to this.
Well,
the
and that's my point. See, what the movie did was the movie tried to reach middle America in a sense that it tried to downplay a lot of the things that are a little less comfortable for people in the book. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't try to play to its audience. Your audience is a million, you know, millions and millions of readers. These books are worldwide. They've sold millions and millions of copies. You have enough viewership in those readers that you need to play to them. You can't play to the wider audience because then you mess up the storyline. And that's where it went off, I think, in the film. I don't, Karen, did you see the movie?
I did.
Do you kind of feel similarly or do you feel differently?
I agree with that statement. I liked the movie. I didn't think it was that bad, but there were some things that it definitely could have improved upon. However, to play devil's advocate a little bit, The 100 is also a book series and a television series, and I've read two of the three books, and I saw the pilot of that show, and it is from the get-go completely different from the book. They changed a lot of things, and that show is really blowing up right now. There it has a very passionate fan base, and as far as I know, it's doing really well. I wonder honestly if they really do need to stick to the books as closely as they should have with the movie, or if they'll end up going in a different direction and maybe it'll blow up too.
But I'll tell you what's different between The 100 and The Mortal Instruments. The 100 does not have a major book following. At the time that it was becoming a TV show, only the first book was barely out, and it was not a huge deal. Not like it is now. Whereas we have The Mortal Instruments, again, huge worldwide reading audience. Huge. People are passionate about these books. So if you lose that audience and other people are like, well, if the audience who read the books aren't involved, I mean, that's usually how it tends to go. So, I mean, I don't know. They could go completely different, but I think because people love what is in the books, and what is in the books is really cool. There's a lot to work with there. And once you start getting into it, then yes, you can make it a little bit different, and you don't have to, you know, stick to it line by line. You can deviate and you can make it, because that world is expansive once you really get into it. So I think that once you start to get into it and you have your audience is invested, then you can play with it a little bit. But I don't think you can play with it too much. Because, I mean, Outlander is a prime example. Outlander is sticking very solidly to the source material. And it's massive. It has a huge following. And again, that's a set of books that's been around a really long time. It had a massive, you know, reading audience. You can't really, when you have a reading audience that big, I don't think you can deviate too far from the source, because when you do, you don't get your reading audience. They're not sold on it. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I think the problem with the film is a lot of the things that they were changing were things that the reading audience really loved, like Clary and Jace's relationship. Like, you can't really, like, that's what drives the books. I mean, really, in a lot of ways, that is a core portion of the story. So when you start to play and manipulate that and make it not what it is in the books, I think that that affects how people will view, you know, the movie or the show or whatever it is, because they read the books because they liked the story. It didn't matter if there was this, you know, implied incest. It didn't matter. They read the books because they wanted to know. They were reading that storyline. And then, it, you know, when it got kind of downplayed and twisted very differently in the movie, I think that affected how people, you know, were viewing things. I don't know. That could just be my perception, and that's entirely possible. But I think that that kind of had something to do with it. So what do you think about Clary and Jace's relationship? Does it have to be similar to what was in the books, or do you think it needs to be different?
I would say it has to be pretty similar, just because that is basically the story. I mean, there's a lot of other factors going on, and the secondary characters are wonderful, and their storylines are amazing. But I think when it comes down to it, this book series is about Clary and Jace, and they have to handle that correctly. And To be honest, I'm looking forward to it being, as a show in general, a little bit different from the books. I know you wrote in here like you want it to be edgy and urban. I want it to be really dark and I want it to be intense. Yes. And I think that they can still carry out Clary and Jace's relationship and a lot of other plot points like they do in the book. But I think it needs to be aged up and I think it needs to be dark. And I think it needs to have a little bit of that flair to it that's going to bring in other people, not just the people who like the series, but maybe other people who like just urban fantasy in general.
Right, and that's what I meant by kind of the edgy and urban. Like, it's got to have that gritty feel to it that makes it this urban. Like, because, I mean, that's what it is. It's an urban fantasy novel. And I think that comes across really clearly in the books themselves. And I want it to be, I don't want it to be like this grunge punk thing, which is what I think the movie kind of had going for it. It was a little too much leather and bondage outfits. But I think that they play with, well, let's, I mean, really. Think
yeah,
about it.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a way to play with it, but still make it what it needs to be. And the other aspect of the story that I think they played with a little bit too much in the movie was Alec. I didn't feel he was quite right. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Alec is one of the gay characters in the story, and he basically is in love with Jace. And when Clary comes along, that kind of rocks everyone's boat. And it didn't seem quite right in the movie. It just felt like he was angry because Clary was there. And it wasn't just about that. There was more to it than that. So, I don't know. I just want them to get that storyline right because I think it's an important aspect, again, to the story because it carries on, like, Alec and what Alec's challenges are, because in his world, being gay is not acceptable. So that kind of carries out through all the, you know, all the novels. So again, getting that storyline right is really important.
And considering Alec is a lot of people's favorite characters,
yes.
That's
yeah.
going to be huge. I really wish, though, that Godfrey Gao could come back as Magnus because, that man is beautiful, like, hands down, one of the most gorgeous men on this planet. But secondly, I think he got the feel of Magnus really right, and his makeup was done really well, and he had that sort of mysterious, flirty kind of look to him, and... Yeah, I'm going to miss him. I hope they can get somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if he could come back. Like, I mean, there is no saying that the people who played the characters in the movie couldn't come play them in the TV show. Like, Godfrey could easily come back and play Magnus. It's not like Godfrey, you know what I mean? Like, for Jamie Campbell Bauer and for Lily Collins, they're movie actors. I mean, that's what they do. But some of the others do TV work and stuff, so it wouldn't go against the grain for them to come and do a TV series. You know what I mean? So it's a possibility. And the guy who played Simon, I really liked him as well.
Oh, yeah, he was good.
Great job. So he could definitely, that's something he could definitely do too. Because again, I think Simon is a character you need to get kind of right in order for it to work.
Definitely. Let's start a petition.
I know. Let's make a list of things. So those are kinds of the things that I'm looking forward to see what they do with this TV show. I know from Cassie's tweets and stuff that she's pretty heavily involved in looking at the script and looking at all those things. So I know with the movie that there were challenges with her not being able to give her opinion on the script and stuff, and that's why some of the things played out the way they did. Like, and I think the biggest thing in the movie was the way the movie ended was completely different from the way the book was. So you didn't really have a place to go for the second one. And then with Simon being bitten early, you had, like, it kind of messed with the whole plot line in what would have been the second movie. So I can see how that wasn't going to work. But I'm hoping that the TV show's a little bit closer.
And don't mind me as I sit over here and cross my fingers that this goes over well, because if it does, then this could become a trend. Like, book series that don't necessarily excel in the movie sphere that might excel in the TV sphere. Percy Jackson.
And we bring it full circle.
I would love a Percy Jackson TV series. I think it's a perfect fit for a, you know, like a network like ABC Family. And if this works for them, then there's a total possibility that something like that could, you know, it could open doors. So you never
know. It would do so well on ABC too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. ABC is, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. We shall see how it all works out, I guess. And that will be sometime, from what I understand, sometime early next year, the Mortal Instruments will be hitting TV screens. So we'll see. And we'll keep you guys posted as we hear any more casting news. Because, again, I think that will play a large part in how well this show does. So it'll be interesting. All right, now on to our last bit of topic, I guess, for today. We're going to talk about Carry On, which is Rainbow Rowell's new book, and that comes out in, I think, October as well. And basically, and this is another really unique thing, because basically, Carry On is the spin-off novel, sort of, from Fangirl, and basically, it's the story of the fan fiction that's happening in her book. Which is, like, it's so crazy to me. What do you guys think about that?
When I heard that this was how, because she had been hinting that there was something that had something to do with Fangirl, and, you know, and when I saw that this was how she was doing it, I was like, talk about different. Like, she's not taking one nothing character that was mentioned twice and writing a whole story about them. No, she's taking the fan fiction and writing it. Like, she clearly she clearly has an entire world, you know, like, she clearly saw that whole story and knew exactly what Simon Snow's story was. So I am actually kind of excited about this, because from the little bits we got in Fangirl, like, I was intrigued to know, like, the whole story. So I feel like that'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I want you guys to stop now, and I'm gonna do this to you all, because this is what happens to me every time I hear or say the title of this book, Carry On. I hear Nate Ruiz in my head from Fun singing Carry On. You get the song I'm talking about? Yeah, now try to avoid that the next time you read that title.
I'm just every time.
Every time he sings in my head, it's fine. I'm crazy. So for those of you who don't know the story, basically this is the fan fiction that's built into Fangirl that Kath is writing. This is the entire story that the fan fiction is built on. So the synopsis is, Simon Snow just wants to relax and savor his last year at the Watford School of Magics. But no one will let him. His girlfriend broke up with him, his best friend is a pest, and his mentor keeps trying to hide him away in the mountains, where maybe he'll be safe. Simon can't even enjoy the fact that his roommate and longtime nemesis is missing, because he can't stop worrying about the evil Git. Plus, there are ghosts, and vampires, and actual evil things trying to shut Simon down. When you're the most powerful magician the world has ever known, you never get to relax and savor anything. Carry On is a ghost story, a love story, a mystery, and a melodrama. It is just as much kissing and talking as you'd expect from Rainbow Rowell's story, but far, far more monsters. So I even love the description, you guys. Like, I think it sounds so cool.
It's so fun.
I know. I'm so excited about this. So in case you guys didn't notice or didn't see, it has this seriously cool cover. I like the cover because it's really subtle. It's not like some crazy thing. It almost looks like watercolors, maybe. And basically, it's two male faces. One is in yellow, one is in blue. And at the bottom, done in black, is like a watercolor painting of what looks like a creepy mansion. And then all of the lettering and stuff, like in her name and the title, all looks like water painting over the top of the blue and the yellow.
It's very Rainbow Rowell. Like,
Yeah.
It screams her. It really does.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. Like, and I'm really excited about it. I don't know. I like it. And don't get me wrong. I absolutely loved Fangirl. Like, loved it. So I'm kind of curious. I mean, this, of course, will be different from Fangirl, but I'm really curious just to see where this story goes and how much of it she did really have in her head, because this sounds like a big story. Do you know what I mean? It sounds like there's a lot going on there, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, in addition to, like, the obvious Harry Potter connection, you know, just from the whole idea of it. I also, like, feel like a Wicked vibe coming off of it, like the rooming with his nemesis, who we all know, you know, like stuff like that. Like, there's little things that that she's got in that description that pop out at me, and I'm like, oh, that's okay, all right. So I'm like combining these different, you know, stories and worlds that I've read before, and I'm like, okay, yeah, all right, I see it. It's gonna be cool.
Yeah, I think it is. I read somewhere that she said this one's gonna be a little bit darker than her other books, so I'm kind of curious to see what that means and where it will go. So I don't know.
And this is such a big departure for her from what, like, she's written so far. It's all been very contemporary and, you know, real world-ish. So this is a really interesting way for her to delve into the whole supernatural world and still have it be attached to something she's done before. I think that's really interesting and cool.
It's a kind of good way to segue into something different, I think, in a lot of ways. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, so this is what she... Okay, I found it. So she says, this book is a little darker and rougher than my other books. Tense. I wanted to... and she said, I wanted a cover that made me feel a little nervous. Also, I like that even though this cover isn't obviously romantic, there's a really strong now kiss vibe. So she's saying that the novel is darker and rougher than her other books, more tense. So this ought to be really cool. Like, I'm excited. I think it's going to be really cool. I think that, you know, October is going to have a lot going on for us in the book world between Magnus Chase and Carry On and probably all the other millions of books that are coming out that are going to be amazing. So, yeah. All right. So, listeners, if you have any thoughts about this latest book from Rainbow Rowell, do tell, because I am super curious to see how the rest of you feel. And till next time, and I guess we should mention that we have for our May book of the month will be Ember in the Ashes. I don't want anyone to forget. That comes out this week. And then for our June book, as Karen already announced, she's even picked it out early. Gasp, will be Undertow by Michael Buckley. All right, so those will be upcoming in those 2 months. And until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.